way some women so willingly compromised every ounce of themselves in the name of building a life for themselves that they didn't enjoy.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that rates and reviews the internet's most viral books and tell you guys if they're worth reading or not, especially if you're really, oh my gosh, really busy professionals like us. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And this week we have a doozy of a book. It has kind of gone very viral in recent months and was, I believe, picked for GMA's book club, Good Morning America. And it's kind of a talker because it deals with tradwife culture, social media, and far-right Christian ideologies. It is Yesteryear. And the book follows a main character, our main narrator, Natalie, as she kind of tells us about her life as a trad wife and as an influencer on social media. But then suddenly she kind of gets ripped to the past and wakes up in a place she doesn't recognize that seems to be from pioneer times and with a family she doesn't recognize. And she is struggling with both that. And then also we get flashbacks to her past life and how she met her husband and where she got there and having boatloads of children with her husband and then filming them for content and clout and money and living on a farm in Idaho, despite having no skills at farming whatsoever. All while listening to her annoying and grating voice.
Yeah. So do you guys have reviews from the internet? And I know there were plenty.
Yes. I can start. My reviews are a little bit lengthy. I just didn't want to go silly for this book because I have so many thoughts about it. And I think I have what may be a controversial opinion about it. So I really wanted to read reviews that actually kind of spoke to some of the things that I felt about it. So anyway, I'm going to try to read some of these quickly, but they are a little bit wordy. So the first one is a 1-star review. There's a level of cynicism here that was hard to stomach. Natalie had a constant internal dialogue of hate towards just about everyone who wasn't her, and it was painful to read. She viewed herself as a victim with no choice, even though every decision was hers the whole way through, and she could have stopped at any time. But Natalie isn't real. She's a creation of the author, so I feel like I'm forced to ask why Burke chose to write Natalie this way. It felt unnecessarily mean-spirited and cruel. Sure, there are women out there who want to have lots of kids and make every meal from scratch and let their husbands be the sole breadwinner of the family. But so what? I certainly wouldn't write a whole story just to make fun of them. I understand this is supposed to be satire, but it really missed the mark. Satire isn't just the act of mocking. In order to be effective, it has to say something of substance. But the problem here is that even when presented with a slew of worthwhile topics, the book instead chose to eschew them all in favor of returning again and again to focus on how deranged Natalie is, all while punishing her for her views. When you go so over the top, you end up losing the humanity underneath, and it becomes harder to see the characters as real people. Instead of being subversive and feminist, this book actually reinforces the idea that women are crazy and can't be trusted to figure out what they want. And maybe that's the crux of my negative feelings. When you create a character that's so spiteful and unhinged, you're essentially walking them down a path of mental illness. The second paragraph is just, this novel sidesteps one of the most interesting and important questions. What does it mean to choose this life and to profit from it and to promote it to others? Natalie's not simply trapped. She's also a builder and beneficiary. She cultivates the brand, monetizes it, and helps reinforce it. Yet the narrative doesn't fully grapple with that complicity. Instead, it increasingly positions her as a victim. The psychological framing often softens the critique, transforming what could have been an examination of agency into something closer to a case study and breakdown. So, yeah.
Damn. Mine's really short. It's a 1-star review.
I knew those are really out of character for me, but I just like I needed help with
you have feelings about this book and we will definitely get into it. Mine's a 1-star review and it just says to think trees were murdered to publish this book.
Mine is a 4.25 star review, and it says crazy, but made from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Made from scratch, hell yeah. Okay. Well, the overall Goodreads rating is 4.01 out of 5. The Fable rating is 4 out of 5. The Storygraph rating is 4.14 out of 5. Where did you guys come down?
I'm going to guess we should have Casey go last.
Yeah, I was like, actually, I should.
Well, I kind of looked at other reviews because I think I finished first.
You did finish first. I know both of your reviews, to be fair.
Okay, you go first then.
Okay. I gave it 4 out of 5 on Goodreads, but as I've like sat with the book after finishing it, I'm probably closer to a 3.5, in between 3 and 4, because I get what the author was trying to do, but I don't think that this is satire. Like Casey's review said, I think satire has to be like humorous and funny and witty. And there was no wit to this. It was just kind of angry and not a lot of nuance, to say the least. I appreciate the premise. I liked the twists that it took. I think that was interesting. And I liked some of how it developed, because I think it has some interesting commentaries on family vloggers and tried wife culture and kind of how, where America is kind of leaning in this kind of cultural war between like trad wife and religion and all of the in between. Everything's a hotbed right now, but I don't know if the book executed it as well as it should have when you're trying to do this as like a satire and as a commentary. So I'm going to lean more to 3.5, but I like the idea of it.
I gave it a 4 similarly. It's not what I totally expected from the book. I did expect it to be kind of funnier. However, I'm not mad. It turned out to be almost like a psychological thriller, which was interesting. I think I just enjoyed that it was so unique. I haven't read anything similar. I don't know. I think it reads, it's such a fun read for the moment. Now, if someone picked this up 10 years from now, I don't know that it would hit the same. But for the moment, it's really fun. You know, like the ballerina farm, people are out there like, is this about me?
Is this play about us?
Yeah. I don't know. Like her writing was interesting. I hated the main character, but you're supposed to. Yeah. And I hated her in a way that I'm like, what is she going to do next? Yeah, it started one way and went a totally different direction. And just for like keeping me on my toes, I didn't like the end, not because of what happened, but because of how we got there, sort of. I'll explain that later. I actually needed more. But I still think like it was a fun ride. So 4 stars.
I am very surprised to hear this book described as fun. This book was like some hard ass, long ass work for me.
I actually couldn't put it down and stayed up late one night trying to finish the last bit.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We had very different experiences reading it then. I rated it a 3 out of 5, but I'm somewhere in between a 2 and a 3. I also agree. I strongly believe this is a thriller and not satire. I think one of the reasons I didn't like it to the extent that I did is I think it's very misrepresented in the advertising of it. And it doesn't really deliver the concept it advertises it's going to deliver. But ultimately, I hated this book so much because I think this is actually doing something really bad for women, and it is essentially laying the blame for this patriarchal moment at the feet of individual women. Like, I feel like Natalie is vilified to an extent that she's not a real person. She's a caricature. And that made me feel when I read it that I was not reading a story, an exploration of an idea, an exploration of a character, but an absolute fire hose to the face of Democrat propaganda. And it's like, I agree, but I just don't think this book actually says anything unique or interesting. I think this book says trad wifery can be bad, conservative ideals can be oppressive. And to me, that's not really a unique or interesting take. It doesn't really elaborate on or get deeper into the ideas that are supposed to be in the book. And I think what it does is it actually ultimately both presents you with a female character who is empowered and privileged, and yet somehow does not exercise that at all. And so she is both the villain of the novel and the victim in a way that is very confusing and really does not hold her accountable for either. So anyway, I have a lot of thoughts. I think the crux of it is that I felt like all the characters in the book were extremely flat, did not really undertake any growth, and were ultimately not held accountable for their choices in the book, which I think was just like, then what was this book for? And I just don't really understand. I just felt like I read an angry Democratic woman's rantings punishing conservative women without the nuance of what has created the cultural moment. So fair anyway, enough. I was not a fan.
Well said.
Yeah.
And I get it. But it was one of those where I was like, I don't care because it's not fun.
I agree with Casey. The fact that you find this fun is crazy to me. Yeah. This was not fun at all.
This book was hard work for me to finish. Like, I mean, living in Natalie's brain should be psychological torture.
It was horrifying in like a fun way.
They need to give this to war prisoners. Like, it is just the least fun possible read.
It's hell to be a woman.
It's hell to be Natalie, that's for sure.
Anyway, I have some solid book recs for the end.
Okay.
Exciting.
To read instead of or in spite of this one.
Okay. Well, that leads us to our non-spoiler discussion.
No, we forgot to read the Goodreads ratings, didn't we?
We already did that.
Oh, I read them.
Oh my God. Look at me. I got so distracted by Casey's rant that I...
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so is the book more plot or character driven?
Character, because you don't actually know what the plot is for a lot of the book.
But it is kind of plot driven.
I would argue plot. It's just the plot doesn't appear till about 75%.
Yeah.
Because the plot is sort of following Natalie trying to start the farm and start her Instagram page. And then the plot kind of becomes something else once the twist happens. But I don't really think it's character because Natalie isn't really an evolving character.
Yeah, I would say plot as well, even though you don't know it until you know it.
And this is part of why it's confusing with her like agency question mark in the book is because she doesn't really act everything, but also she kind of does, but she kind of acts in response to the plot and not necessarily creating it. And so, I don't know. I would say plot.
I'm going to stick with character.
Fair enough.
I think all her choices and what she's manifesting drives it all. It doesn't mean she's interesting. I'm not saying that. Caveats to everything I say.
I do see it. But I'm still going to go plot.
And that's your right. You're allowed to do that.
I'm gonna agree with Casey on plot.
Look at us being women with brains and choices.
Oh my God. Guys.
Okay.
You're where we'll take us.
We're those angry women.
Have you or would you read other books by the author? I believe this is her debut novel.
I'm not gonna
either.
It would depend what it's about, maybe.
Unless she gets a better advertising or like book person that actually tells you what this book's supposed to be about.
Yeah.
Like, this book was false advertising, to say the least.
It was demonstrably falsely advertised. Like, I was reading this book. Okay. For the listeners, the premise that is introduced to you beforehand, we've mentioned it before, is tradwife influencer essentially gets sent back to live in like the 1800s time frame. So
that is sort of pitched to me.
Yes. the premise you imagine is more so based in the old times, and it implies that the book will more so be evaluating the character responding to this new situation, and that will challenge her belief system. That is not at all what the book is at all. 90% of the book is spent in modern day, and you get flashes of her in the olden times.
Yeah.
But the book is more so centered on her journey to get there rather than her responding to that twist.
Yeah.
And it also brings up this fantasy magic component, which didn't exist.
It kind of God of the Woods does.
Yes, it's very God of the Woods.
It's a different book than you've been pitched.
Yes.
And I think if pitched as a thriller with tradwife settings, I think the book accomplishes that a lot better than the book that it says that it's going to be. So,
correct.
I think that's important.
Which then I wouldn't have read it because I'm not a thriller person.
Right. And then I wouldn't have been interested. And also the whole book would have made more sense because I would have just been like, okay.
But here's the thing. We had to read it anyway because it was so trendy.
Oh, I know. Look at what we do for you people.
A lot of mysteries and thrillers. It's good for us.
We have read so many mysteries and thrillers. I just want to point that out this year.
We have, but not, I would say not a lot of thrillers since our first or second year doing the podcast. I'd say more mysteries.
Fair enough.
And more fantasy-leaning, sci-fi-leaning mysteries than like a proper...
Yeah, we've read a lot of sci-fi-y stuff, I feel like.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like people are always talking about new hot fantasy stuff or like thriller mystery stuff. I'm like, actually, I'm so out of tune with that one. So send us your recs, I guess.
The problem is many of them are pretty bad. And the plot twist in this one is actually very good and unexpected.
Yeah.
The problem is it undercuts what it's trying to build thematically. So it basically it invalidates what you think the whole point of the book is.
Yeah,
so,
just deflates.
If it had been pitched differently, I may not be so angry about that, but
correct.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to bring this up just because I think it's just an interesting point to know. But the author is a co-host on a feminist podcast, and they do deep dives into various kind of cultural feminist analysis into like relevant political things for women. So like they did an Usha Vance episode and kind of broke down what being a Republican woman meant for Usha Vance versus someone like Mom Donnie's wife, who is similarly a brown woman, who's the wife of a famous politician, and kind of how their political parties and the way they've handled it is different. Anyway, I actually enjoy the podcast. I don't listen to it often, but I occasionally listen to it and talk about it with some of my friends. But I think knowing that is very important when you're thinking about where the author is coming from and the ultimate trajectory of the story and the way Natalie is treated in it.
Yeah, that is important to know.
I did read that beforehand, so I did know that going in.
Yeah. Okay. How was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
Okay. Well, I know I'm in the minority here. I thought it was fine. And I even stayed up late because the twist came at a time where I was like, I just got finished this to know what the heck just happened. Kind of anticlimactic. So not sure it was worth staying up late, but, I don't know. It took me a couple days to read. I thought it was fine. It's a pretty average length book. Pretty easy language.
I listened to it on audiobook because I had an Audible credit, and it took me 2 weeks to listen to, which is not normal for me.
So, yes. Hurt.
It was not well paced on audiobook. I'll say that.
They really had different experiences. I had no idea.
Yeah, I actually have almost the exact experience to Catherine. So it also took me roughly 2 weeks to read, and I ended up listening to the audiobook on Spotify because this book is so intensely negative and pessimistic that I could not bring myself to actually open it up and read it with my eyes. I had to just put my headphones on and like hold myself hostage with the words just entering my brain.
You can't leave.
And I hated virtually every second of it. Now, I want to remind y'all, I still gave the book somewhere between 2 to 3 stars. So it was not a 1-star read for me. There are things that I thought were good. There are proponents of it. There are things that I thought were decent. I just think it's sort of drowned out in this universal negativity and punishment and just like blame, while also like victimization and helplessness of Natalie, that I think the book is ineffective because of that. However, I did not abjectly hate it. But it was borderline torture for me to listen to it. I could not get through it. And I want to warn you guys. So the first week I started listening to it, I was just working and stuff. So I don't really have, you know, an excuse there. The second week I was listening to it, I was in this beautiful vacation with my family, and having to put the headphones on and inject Natalie's words into my brain while in the middle of a beautiful island vacation with my family was like fucking killing me, because I'm having this great time in this beautiful place. I'm like, you know, I'm filling up my cup, seeing my parents, seeing my sisters, and then I have to enter Natalie's world, which is just like
in Idaho.
Idaho, the most torturous, horrible universe possible. And it was just so hard for me to get through it. So that's a lot of words to basically express that I thought the pacing was terrible.
Yeah, I normally can listen to audiobooks at work, because like when I'm doing busy work and stuff, it's just easy to put on and like I'm still able to process everything. I could not listen to this at work because that would make me so depressed, I would jump off my building.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so negative.
Mm-hmm.
You put, okay.
And for virtually no purpose. Like there was no reason for her to be written that way. No. I don't want to get into it now, but I'll get into it in the like spoiler discussion, why I think that actually makes it a worse book. That Natalie is so unlikable. No, I didn't read the end notes.
No.
You should.
Hmm.
She didn't write her that way originally.
She didn't? Interesting. Okay.
I don't have it anymore, but she talked about why she changed her mind and
maybe that's why it's disjointed.
Yeah, maybe that's why it felt.
Well, I will say I also realized in the end notes that so the reason this got blew up, not only was it a GMA book club pick, but Anne Hathaway immediately picked it up to be produced into a movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Spoilers, like our next question. But it turns out Anne Hathaway actually got a hold of this so early. She helped edit the book. Like helped decide the angle of the book.
Excuse me?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's fucked up.
A lot of people helping her kind of like bring this idea to life.
That actually makes
me she like, wrote it, but like Anne Hathaway has been on board since its inception.
That's
actually
the idea of too many cooks in a kitchen.
Yeah, I actually don't like that, because to me that also makes me feel like part of the choices were made to make it this widely marketable rather than staying true to what the vision was.
So yeah, I think it would have been a better movie with what was pitched to us, but
yes, I agree with you. That's why this is so crazy.
I was so excited for the idea that was pitched to me. Mind and then you, it wasn't Anne Hathaway's that
about to play the main character in Verity. So do what you will with that.
Oh, that actually
don't get me fucking started on that.
God damn, man. I like Anne Hathaway until right this second.
Fucking love The Devil Wears Prada too.
Yeah.
I'm just saying she likes these kind of weird.
Yeah, she's in her indie
thriller
era
kind of books.
Yeah. That hurts. Okay, that does inform my answer to the next question. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book? I originally would have said yes, because I wanted to know if Anne Hathaway was going to deliver more of what I thought the original pitch was. Now that I know Anne Hathaway's been involved since the beginning, early on, my answer changes to no, because I'm not interested in seeing this adapted for screen.
No, if it's just this book adapted to a movie, no, I'm good. Thanks.
I don't really watch thrillers.
Yeah.
So they're just going to pitch it the same way and everyone's going to go to a movie and be like, what?
Right.
I don't know. It was interesting. I don't know if I'd watch the movie, though, because I don't think it's a visually interesting book necessarily. It's a lot of in her head stuff.
Like, right. Don't get me wrong, Idaho is beautiful. It's fucking beautiful out there in Idaho, and like the scenery and the national parks, like the mountains, it's really pretty. That's not enough to make a movie.
Yeah. Also, if I wanted to see a privileged white conservative political family fall apart on my screen, I could turn on the news. Like, I just don't need to see that thrillerized. Okay. So what about Busy Girl rating?
I'm going to stick with my 4. I don't think it was a hard read. I think pretty much anyone could pick this up. I'm not saying everyone would enjoy it, but it's like there's not a high threshold to get into this book. You know, you don't even have to be into thrillers or into lit fic to enjoy this. As the reviews show us, a lot of people have picked this up just because GMA and Anne Hathaway told them to, and they've enjoyed it. So
influencer culture,
honestly, marketing genius. So I'm going to stick with a 4 because I think, you know, it would appeal to a wide audience because it's not specifically fantasy or sci-fi or something that not everyone enjoys. So
I'm going to go with a 2. I hated it. I also think there's things about the messaging that are straight up like poorly thought out and problematic. And so I also think 75% of the book is just pretty boring. And then you get to the twist and you realize the twist kind of made the whole other part of the book irrelevant. Anyway, I'm not a fan. I don't think I'd recommend it to anyone. I wonder if the ratings will drop as more
people. I've already recommended it to like 4 people.
Oh my
gosh.
Hey,
I'm Caitlin.
I ain't recommending this to nobody. So I'll leave it there. For me, it's a 2.
Sorry, y'all.
I struggled to get through it.
I'll drop to a 3 because I also don't think this is a wildly appealable book.
Despite it being wildly appealed.
Despite it being wildly appealed. Like, I've had male coworkers come up to me and ask if I'm reading this book because they were like deeply interested in what was pitched to them. And now that I've listened to it, I will tell them not to read it because that's not what happened. Although he might actually enjoy it. But anyway, it's a hard book to read and get through for 2/3 of these people on this podcast. So that's what my sample size is currently.
This is not normal. I was weird when this is what happens.
I love it.
And it's not even a fantasy book.
No.
I know.
And here's the thing. I like the book more than Casey did, obviously. I gave it a 3.5. Just got some problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm like the nice, like over in an uncharted waters. I'm like, where am I?
Don't worry. We will never lead a social media bullying campaign against you that fractures your mind. So
thanks. It wasn't social media though. It was television primetime. So,
well, the interview was, but all the bullying was social media.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is a perfect segue into spoiler alert section. Do you wonder what we're talking about? You should keep listening if you want the deets, but if you want to read this book, despite what the other two are saying and understand all the hype, pause now, come back later to listen to the spoiler section. Because we're going to ruin it all for you. And there's a pretty, pretty big twist at the end. Okay. Time for Casey to destroy it, I guess.
Should we just open the floor to Casey destroying?
Honestly, okay. Honestly, I feel like I already got a lot of my thoughts out.
I think your review handled a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that's part of why I read them, is I feel like they just very succinctly summarized a lot of what I felt and wanted to say about the book. I think the only other thing I really feel the need to add up top is that I think that when you write a book this where a main character is this intensely negative and unsympathetic, you end up actually letting people off the hook because they're not like her. And it ends up reading as more of a critique of Natalie, the main character, than the systems that Natalie represents, which is part of why I don't feel like this book is satire, is because it zooms in so closely on Natalie, and Natalie is such a caricature, like not a real person, never seemed real to me, never read like a real person, that it's no longer feels like it applies to the real world. Like, Trad Wives and the Rise of Trad Wives is a huge topic that I think all women should be thinking about, should be talking about, should be critical of. And I don't think this book actually delivered any critical commentary on this moment, what it means for young women, and what the women who do this content really are guilty of. It made it more so, and this is part of why the twist invalidates everything, because the twist makes it more about Natalie falling apart mentally than Natalie having to own and confront the ways in which she has hurt other women and furthered oppression for other women.
I don't disagree. Like, I was hoping if it was the premise that was pitched, I could like slide this to some women at my church and be like, hey, read this.
Yeah, right. And your time suck ass. You don't want to be
however,
in.
Yeah.
I think, okay, here's a question for you. Would your opinion be different had the pitch been more accurate to what it actually was?
I think
It was pitched as not satire, not a characterization of tradwifery, but pitched as a villain origin story for a woman who just happened to dabble in that world.
Yes, that would change my opinion.
Really?
Okay. But I think the book is still guilty of half committing to the bit. Like,
presenting. I think it can't choose. I think you're right.
Yes. So it presents these ideas and then doesn't follow through on them, which I think is ultimately harmful, because now you give access to this book to tons of women who have all been exposed to tradwife content. And you essentially give Natalie the slip for what she's done. And you give everyone around her the slip for what she's done. And that's part of why I think the book reads as more of like a democratic diatribe than a story, is it's like ruthlessly mean to Natalie, but does not contextualize or introduce any nuance to the situation that she's in. So Natalie is at once the victim because she can't get herself out of this scenario. And she's also the villain because now we're blaming her for not getting herself out of this scenario. And I think both is unfair. And both does not actually hit the nail on the head of like what I think the message should productively be, which is that these ideas, women are oppressors and victims in this ecosystem. And being a victim doesn't exempt you from accountability for what you've done, but it does change, I think, the lens with which we should read the story, which is that Natalie was convinced that this is who she needed to be in order to fit into her community. And everyone in her life told her this. And then by the end of the story, vilified her and hated her for doing it. But Natalie is not given any of this like nuance because she's so hateable. And that's what made it just a boring story to me, is like, there's nothing here for Natalie to grapple with because she's just a terrible person, which just means like the story is just like a diatribe against a caricature that ultimately ends with this caricature like caving in on herself rather than making any kind of meaningful commentary.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would also say, I think you could have, because it's a very isolated book, which is interesting when you're trying to deal with very complex and global themes. And I think you can do the isolationalist horror in like when she's in the past. And I think that's fine, because that's the point of it, is that you are very isolated in pioneer times. You might not even know your neighbors. You will never leave your house. Your husband will beat the shit out of you. You're a breeder. That is what you are. But when we're going back to the past of her coming to this point, it can't be isolationalist if you want to hit the themes in which you are trying to hit about tradwife, social media, and culture. But we were so isolated on this farm, we never saw the global scale of everything around.
No, you only got it in that when she took that social media class.
That's which is like, not enough.
No.
But and also, like, if you're going to do isolationist, your characters have to be super deep. And especially the side characters have to be super deep. And her family needed to be deeper, and they needed to be more active participants in it. And they needed to be less so a character caricature of tradwife culture, but more of like villains, but also complex, morally gray villains. Like, I think this would have been better if Natalie was more morally gray, but she's just black. She is morally black the entire book. There isn't really any like redeeming qualities to her. And it makes it hard to root for her, which I can enjoy books in which I hate the main character that we're listening to and the narrator. But it is harder to write that than it is to write like a likable main character. And if you're going to execute, you need to find nuggets of like attachment to the reader. You need to find a nugget in which the reader can be like, oh, but I can hold on to this one thing that I like about her in order to make it work.
I mean, the other thing is you find out she's an unreliable narrator. So you don't even know if you can believe
anything
what she has said by the end.
Right. To me, I think the ultimate failing, I think a lot of the problems in the book would have been fixed. I think Natalie should have been more likable than she was, because then she would have seemed like a real person. But also, Natalie never in the book, ever a single time, second guesses her choices.
No.
No.
And that's part of where the accountability and the tension and the horror could have, and I think should have come from, is Natalie realizing she's walked down this path and does not have a backup plan and now has to make a choice, because this book has very few instances where Natalie makes really concrete, intentional decisions, which is another one of my problems with it, because she just sort of ends up in this life, which makes her seem stupid, which I think is part of why this book feels like it's blaming her for the situation she's in, when the situation she's in is like the result of decades of grooming to be this person. Ultimately, we're all responsible for how we deal with that. But Natalie needed to have moments where she questioned and either dug in harder or tried to escape. Because what we have right now is just a woman who is supposed to be smart, but seemingly just kind of bewilderingly ends up in her life and then never questions it. And it's just sort of bizarre that that's how it goes. And I guess that's something that I'm trying to describe, but I'm finding very difficult to like describe, is that Natalie is actually robbed of agency, even though she is the driver for the story. And it doesn't read correctly, because it's like she's constructing this life and then not taking ownership for it, or she's ending up in this life and then pretending as if she has no power to change it. And so it just feels like, what is the point of this?
Like, but I do think yes and no. Because some of it, you get to the end and you realize while she thinks she's been in charge of these decisions this whole time, you realize that her husband and father-in-law have manipulated her and her mother even far more than she even realized. So like while she thought she was making her own decisions, she wasn't always. She was being pushed certain ways by certain things. But yes, she ultimately got herself in that situation and never took ownership for it.
But also, like,
you do find out there were outside actors, which is a little bit more of the horror. Like, she got here, she looks back and is like, oh, crap.
Well, she didn't realize the patriarchy was literally, like, infesting her and, like, was literally using her and abusing her. But also, like, she was pitched as this really, really smart character. And she has insightful thoughts and has moral clarity at some moments where she realizes, oh, the angry women and me are not too dissimilar. We have very similar life structures where we both kind of hate our lives and hate our jobs and hate our kids and like all this kind of situation. But she's pitched as this Harvard grad. She went to Harvard, though. You have to be pretty smart if you're not.
She went to Harvard on full scholarship.
Yes. So she is pitched as a very, very smart character, but does some pretty stupid shit.
And seems like. And I think that's kind of emphasized by the fact that, like, without Natalie owning up to her decisions, you just sort of read a book about a horrible woman who leads a life that is very predictably leads to horrible results and then has a breakdown because of it. If Natalie was a more active participant in this, it would feel more of like an indictment on the actual choices she's made, the decisions she's made, the calculations she's made to obey patriarchy. Like, that's ultimately what these women are doing, is they're hedging their bets and they're deciding that they'll get more by going along with this than by fighting it. And that has wide-reaching impacts for the women they convince to do this. And so, yeah, I think I think the tradwife thing felt like more of just like something that was coincidentally there than the driver of the conflict and the themes, even though it is what's at the heart of why Natalie's so unhappy. And she never realizes it.
Yeah. I mean, it's shown in her kids, because like she was groomed and gaslit and misinformed her entire childhood.
And her mom and her sister get redemption arcs, by the way.
Both her mom and her sister get redemption arcs. And it's a very abrupt and quick redemption arc.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like the redemption arcs because she thought she was above them the whole time and she realized she wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the sister redemption
arc. It was all too abrupt. Yes.
Yeah. I would say that the mother was way too abrupt and way too easy. The sister makes more sense to me because of her like abusive ex-husband. That kind of like gets you into a situation where you have to have some mental clarity and have to have some like really tough thoughts and thought processes. Right. But like, I don't know. It's just, I liked the idea of Natalie's breakdown as the twist, because I didn't see it coming and I didn't see what happened would happen. But I don't know. It just seemed a little too easy for her.
And also, okay, so the sister kind of highlights one of my issues, which is that everything in the book comes down to an individual's choices. And each individual has the power to make choices that will change their life. Like the sister is in this horrible, abusive relationship, makes a choice, gets out, and she's essentially redeemed because she has the clarity to leave a relationship. And Natalie is indicted because she doesn't have that clarity or never makes a choice to leave the lifestyle, which I think is an inherent misinterpretation of how patriarchy and power structures work, where the reality is that many women do not have the power to make choices that will change their lives. And that is part of where the horror should come from, is that patriarchy robs women of choice, and watching women deal with their lack of choices is more interesting than blaming women for not making the correct choices. Because the reality is the entire power structure and cultural moment that we're in is designed to force women into these boxes. So it's very hypocritical to me to lay the blame at the feet of women and their choices when, yes, there are many horrible women who should be accountable for their role in this, but that is not the ultimate power structure and power play that is ongoing.
Yeah, she was brainwashed into a lot of those choices.
But there's never a discussion of that. There's never a like moment where she's like, what I'm doing right now is not that different than the 1800s. I still cannot leave my husband. I still cannot stop having children. And why does she keep having children when she doesn't want them? It's great. She's chicken basting herself because she doesn't like her husband and just keeps having children.
It's the only way to keep money from her father-in-law.
I guess, but he never puts a number on it. He never says you must have this many children.
No. I don't know. This is where I think the religious commentary was really interesting, but also just a little bit too hyperbole. Mm-hmm. Like, they never say what religion she came from. They call her Amish. They call her, like, Orthodox. They call her Baptist, you know. Which is fine. You don't need to, like, call anybody out, whatever. It gives Mormon vibes because
it gives Mormons. Yes.
Idaho thing. If you read Educated, it very much gives that vibe. However, a woman like raised in that kind of religious home. This wasn't even like breaking Amish. This was I was secretly evil the whole time I was raised.
Yes.
A girl leaving her religion and trying a new life. It was a girl who changed her image, but still firmly believed what she believed in, like chastising her sister for divorce and things.
Right. An indictment of Natalie, not of the religion.
Right. That's where it was interesting. However, I think the most interesting part of the religious commentary was where she kind of tricked herself into believing someone's always watching you, like you're always on. You realize she's really just being like, oh, God's always watching.
Right.
And
gotta smile
kind
the
of
camera.
The commentary on like, you know, just religion in general. Like, what do you do when you believe your deity is watching?
Right.
But it was interesting how she kind of like went back and forth between it's an audience and it's God.
Well, I thought it was very interesting I think of like a moment that I highlighted in the book was when her mother like pitched that idea to her, and the idea, because like she's like, you made it look so easy. But it's the idea of her mother was in so much pain, but she would never let it show because she always was in her head psychologically thinking, someone is always watching me. So I have to be on my best behavior all the time. And I have to put on a facade that I'm not struggling, even though I am struggling because I'm a single mother.
Yeah. This point is, I'm really glad you guys brought it up, because this is one of the only reasons the book is not rated lower for me, because I loved this point so much. Because also, many women live this way. Mm-hmm. Women live like with
especially mothers,
and the idea that they must always look desirable for men, so that many women just like unconsciously, compulsively think about like how they're being perceived, even when they're alone, as if men could see them or men are watching them. And this is like,
yeah, but she actually does it with her college roommate half the time.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the part where she's accused of assaulting the nanny, you're like, oh, you might have been a lesbian this whole time.
Yeah.
And that's why she obsessed with the room. Anyway, that's on the horror thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like a obsession drama. But I don't know, just like how she assumes that if her old roommate was around, she would always be watching her because she is so great.
Right.
And that's like diabolical.
Right. Or like this idea that someone's always watching is essentially what keeps women in line. Like they never believe, even in their private moments, that they can step outside of this performance.
Yeah. It's very Handmaid's Tale under his eye.
It was also a bit like commentary on religion there too. Like,
yeah.
Oh, 100%.
People only act the way they act because they believe a God is watching them.
Yeah. Cause she would have behaved.
When you should actually just behave like you're a good human to other humans.
Right. And also, like, then you are not really a person. Like, where does the performance become real and when is the performance fake? Which is ultimately a huge problem for Natalie, because she starts to lose track of what's really her, what's a performance, what's fake, what's real. In her kind of like constant pursuit. And I do think
there are people in the evangelical community, as a member myself, who you never know if they're genuine in what they're saying and doing because they have their church smile on. So you never actually know, and you find out later.
Yeah. It's bless your heart energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not, I hate, that's the, okay, here's my thing. I hate when people are fake and inauthentic. That is my biggest pet peeve. I do not want your fake smiles and your fake happiness. Give me your raw personal self. I don't care if it's a bitch. I actually respect it more if it's a bitch. That is like, that's probably why I had problems with church growing up, is because I'm like, all these people, all these bitches and hoes, fake.
That's probably why I still had problems at church, but.
Yeah. I mean, it also is like, I think, very relevant commentary for the influencer moment we're in, not just about Tradwives, but everyone pretending their lives are better and happier and more together than they really are.
Oh, 100%.
And everything, and it's like, being aesthetic.
Just picture your ex nemesis, who was never actually your nemesis on the like reciprocated, is watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because on social media, they probably are.
Yeah.
Right.
Put your best foot forward. Put your best parts of your life and make it seem like that's all your life is.
Right. And even crash outs and like negative moments are kind of reframed and stylized to be some sort of lesson, or like, I'm going to move on from this. Yeah. It's just like, you can't ever have just like the disconnect between what's online and what's a lived experience is so extreme at this point. And it feels like we, as like a culture of humanity, as a nation, have lost track of that. Like,
we've lost the
performance and the videos and the clout matters more than the real lived experience. Okay, so we've been talking about this book for a while, not doing any of our discussion questions.
Okay, but we've probably hit like a lot of them. This book's really easy to talk about. That's why I think book clubs are picking it up left and right for that reason.
There is a lot to talk about.
It's a good book club book. Yes.
Okay, well, one of the way the book is set up is jumps between the sort of real life Natalie lives and then a time jumps to this sort of 1800s universe, which we learn is actually her in the future, who has committed to living like an actual 1800s lifestyle, sort of basically in an attempt to get away from social media and the negative things people are saying about her because of this instance with the nanny where Natalie like becomes violent. What did you guys think of that being the way the story was told?
I didn't expect it. It was quite the twist. As a twist, I was like, oh, that's an interesting twist, because like not a lot of books surprise me. So the fact that it surprised me did well, but then it just deflated from there, like completely deflated. And there was no real payoff to the flip of like, it's her mind breaking apart and that she can't hold two different truths at the same time. And it's breaking her brain.
I agree. I liked it until I figured out. I thought we were going to get to the point where she got transported back in time. What brought her to this moment? And then you realize it's future her, but it never tells you really why she's experiencing this psychosis, where she just like forgets all her past. It just is like, oh, haha, my mind's broken. Here I am again.
Yeah.
Like, why? It doesn't explain that enough. Like, you get from point A to point B, but I feel like there were a few points in like the latter third of that you missed.
Yeah.
And that's where I got kind of disappointed with it, because I was like, I like this, but I'm missing information.
Right. It was also just disappointing to me because I thought this time flip was going to be sort of a way that Natalie finally broke through that wall within herself, where she would finally kind of have some honesty and meet herself face to face and have more of that moment of like self-awareness, and that would be delivered through this experience.
Nope, she's the 1800s until the very end.
Yes, and the 1800s diversion is actually technically a refuge for her that was intentionally created to hide her from the real world.
Yes,
but so, like, why did you get rid of all your plumbing and stuff? Why did Caleb go
along with it?
Yeah, why'd he go from being this like kind of submissive sissy to like someone who beats his wife? Like, how did we get from
completely
A to B?
180 of character?
How did the kids leave and nothing ever came of that? Like, we're missing some key information here.
And why,
why has Clementine not intervened until now?
Right. Why do you just totally forget all these things? Like, you have no memory of this. Like, at some point, your consciousness completely broke from
the
beginning.
Did her sons live nearby?
Yeah.
Really doing it. Like, I have a lot of questions that weren't answered, and they're the ones I wanted answered. They answer a lot of questions I didn't care about.
Yeah. And then, I mean, that does kind of bring us to Caleb, who I also hated because he felt just like unbelievably caricaturish.
He also was written. They were almost written flipped at first, and then she switched it.
Yeah. Like, because he's also in like the patriarchy trap for men, where he has to be a man that he's not. But then at the end of the book, he actually becomes that man, seemingly, where she's like violent and like falls down the manosphere pipeline. And then all of a sudden at the end of the book becomes this like brutally masculine man who like hits and rapes Natalie. And the rape scene is very difficult to read.
Yeah. Well, and then also, he has this moment in the book with Shannon, the producer, where he was like breaking through and deprogramming the manosphere, because she was like, yeah, that's just not true. Like, she just pushed back a little bit and his whole like his ideas like fractured. But then when Shannon gets assaulted by his wife and like this comes out, he crumbles back into the manosphere. Like, we didn't get that part where like we see Caleb go back to that.
Yes. Also, problem with the fact that he sleeps with this 20-year-old woman. That's never really addressed in the book. Then it makes it seem like it's that easy to like break a man from the manosphere. Also, then Shannon's role in the book is seemingly to also be an idiot woman who has no idea what she's doing, because she actually feels bad for Caleb, even though that's like completely the wrong lesson to take from all of this. And so it seems like there's almost no point in Shannon's character other than to also be a villain.
She was also just very confusing because she's like, I don't know, it just kind of happened after I was trying to deprogram him. And so we just started having sex. But then like when Natalie brings up a very potent point of like, are you pregnant? She's like, I would never get pregnant by that idiot. I'm like, but you just said he wasn't an idiot. So what is happening?
And you slept with him for apparently no reason. Like you actually don't like him at all, even though you defend him.
Yeah, the whole Shannon thing was weird. I do like the point that was made, though it was made a little too aggressively, that a man sleeping with a woman in his employment would not derail his political career. But a woman doing something similar, even if not running for office, would derail all of it. Like women have such... Granted, nobody should be doing any of this. Okay. But oaths falls harder on women for slip-ups.
Right.
This was more than a slip-up. I'm not saying this was okay by any means, but it was totally okay when the man did it.
Yeah. Right. Like Caleb is a grown man sleeping with a 20-year-old. No one cares. Right.
His father's like, we can work with that. And then she assaults the girl and like, well, now we need to kill you.
Right. Now you might be a lesbian.
A little too heavily, but... It definitely fits our current political system.
Right. Because the point that I like, that I think the book is trying to make, that could have been made better, but I think is there, is that there's ultimately no good women within the patriarchy. There's no way to win the patriarchy over to your side. If you act and behave perfectly like a good girl in the way they want you to, you ultimately will not be rewarded for it.
Well, and the same thing we've read in other books. No form of feminism is the right and perfect form of feminism.
Yeah, because Shannon seems to want to think that of herself, but everything that she does is actually not a feminist action. Like sleeping with a married woman's husband is not a feminist action. Sleeping with a man who's very conservative, who's a part of the manosphere, not a like feminist action. Ending that woman's life and career because you don't like her, not a feminist action. Like none of these things were feminist actions. And that's also kind of why I question the motivations in the book, because there's no like contrast.
Not a feminist book.
No.
It's kind of a all women are destroying each other with their beliefs.
Right. Correct. Which is maybe true, but
yeah. That probably is the correct commentary.
Well, right. I did. The commentary that I liked when it was like left versus right was the idea of like the far left and the far right are not so dissimilar. Yeah. And that it's actually a circle or a horseshoe where they're actually closer than you think. Because Shannon brings up that point where like liberal women really liked Natalie because she showed this like idyllic version of like anti-government and like just basically like an organic lifestyle, like a granola lifestyle, even though that's not what she intended. But like the fact that like you've got the far right and the far left agreeing more often than not is very funny. And I think that's a very good commentary.
It did bother me. So the character that comes up sort of a lot throughout the book is like Irina or the college friend, whatever her name is.
I think it's Rena. I could be wrong.
Rena. Because I thought the point of Rena's character was to show that whether you go along with patriarchy or you fight it, you ultimately like are between a rock and a hard place. Like the patriarchy punishes women who do what they can to obey it because you will ultimately be disempowered because that's your purpose in the patriarchy. If you fight patriarchy, you will have a harder life and you will hit barriers because you are trying to push back against something and against systems that aren't meant for you. But instead, we get another kind of caricature-ish moment where Rena comes out on top and has this like victorious moment where she comes back to interview Natalie, who's like a broken shell of a woman. And because Rena made the quote unquote correct choices, she gets to live this life where she's wildly successful and then comes back to talk to Natalie, who made the quote unquote wrong choices and who has lost her mind. And I was like, okay, so once again, it feels like we're missing the point. Which also just felt like a bizarre storyline to be in the book.
It was weird.
Like the Shannon thing, the Rena thing, I was just like, I think we're losing track of what these characters are supposed to be giving the novel.
I know, it felt like they were really trying to say she was crazy because she was a repressed lesbian.
Yeah, which is also problematic.
Harmful. Yeah. Super problematic.
Harmful. Yeah.
That part I did go like,
And it was not very, I mean, it wasn't fleshed out at all, not really fleshed out or talked about at all.
She may not have been a lesbian, but that's what it implied.
Yeah, it's heavily implied. And the fact that she was very repressed and very put into a rigid system where that wasn't okay. So she just never thought about it, but thought about it because that is who she is. I don't know. Right. It just wasn't fleshed out enough to warrant. Right.
And it's another one of those things that they just kind of dangle in front of your face and then never address again.
Yeah.
So yeah, the like psychotic lesbian thing, I was like, I have major issues with that. And also bizarre that her husband's like ability to have sex is also weirdly there, but also not explored. Like, it's just like, why are these
things? And then he magically does when they live without electricity.
Like, I guess he can't get hard unless he feels like he's dominating someone, even though that wasn't his characterization at all. Like,
yeah.
The opposite, actually.
I mean, he had a porn addiction for sure. I guess when he stopped having porn, stopped having the addiction. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We have touched on a lot of the questions now. I don't know if there's somewhere you guys want to pick up.
I mean, I think we...
The one I don't think we've touched on is... something that like what we thought this book would be more about, and that's family vloggers and the psychological damage that it has to kids, because we're finding this out now, because family vloggers really popped up once YouTube was really hitting its stride in the 2015-16s. Like, they really popped out of nowhere, and then suddenly there was hundreds of accounts with these families that they were pranking each other. They were showing their day in the life. And when you look at it with a rose-colored glasses lens, it's so cute. They're such innocent families. But then when you actually like put a critical eye to it and say, is that okay to be filming your children? Is that okay to be pranking them, quote unquote, and making them cry, showing their mental breakdown, showing their struggles on the internet that can forever never be taken down and that can be seen by future employers and future like people who look at their college applications. Like, is that okay? What did y'all think of the critiques of family vloggers and how Clementine was kind of used in that way where she like finally says, no, I don't want to be filmed. What did you guys think about that?
I mean, it very obviously took pieces of real life stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. However, I almost would have liked a harder critique.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've said, it's dabbled around the trad wife family blogger thing, but it all was about Natalie. It was not actually about that, and I would have preferred it to be about that.
Right. Because she has this like cognitive dissonance where I feel like I never really understood her relationship with her children.
There wasn't one. And,
yeah, because she seems like a...
She hated them.
Right. She hated them, but then they seem to love her. Like, she is around. They are in videos together. But because it's so focused on Natalie, we get very little insight into what the children's experience in the house is.
Yeah.
I do think showing the dark side of social media in the book was true. It's just another point in the book where I didn't feel like it had anything new to add. Like, I think that we know that this is bad for children, and there's many stories now out there about social media being bad for children. I think it really reminded me of the story. I'm going to blank. It's called Broken Hearts. It's a podcast series, and it's probably going to be one of my recommendations at the end. But me and Catherine listened to this together when we were working in Kansas City, actually.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But it's a story about this lesbian influencer couple who has adopted a bunch of Black children, and they become media viral by essentially being the perfect liberal family, like blended family, queer parents, children of color. And they get famous off of this image that they're this super happy, like multicultural meshed modern family. And then the moms commit group suicide and murder, where they kill themselves and their children by driving off a cliff. And it basically comes to light that there's all these child abuse allegations, the children are being starved, the neighbors were calling CPS. And so anyway, the part of the story that's about that felt very similar to the Broken Heart story. And I saw a lot of parallels there, and it felt very like inspired by that kind of dynamic.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like you're right. And this was written with a script in mind. And it could have been, honestly, you could take the concept and write a whole other story along a similar timeline. And it would be a completely different book, and you couldn't accuse it of plagiarism.
Right. I am desperate for Margaret Atwood to get her hands on this. Or
you do a great job.
Yeah. Or like, there's so many writers that I think, especially science fiction writers, I think could have a field day with bringing the more like original idea to life.
The lady who wrote I Who Have Never Known Men would have loved this in her day.
Yes. Even like Grady Hendrix, my favorite like male writing women author. I would honestly love it if every author I've ever liked would write their own version of the story, because I think they would all be different. And I think could all introduce really interesting themes into the story that would be really cool to read. And that I would sadly, unfortunately, like more than the story.
Well, I think every year it would change a little because the culture online is changing.
Yeah. Right.
The trad wives all do needlepoint now, just saying.
They do.
They've moved on from bread to needlepoint.
Okay. This is another point, actually, that I probably don't need to make because I've already made my points. But it, I think, failed to reflect the fact that trad wives, actually, it did a little bit, but trad wives are capitalizing on a moment. Trad wives aren't the moment. No. So trad wives are creating content that has viewers and is creating storylines and ideas that people actually want to see. And I think this book veered a little too hard in pointing the finger at trad wives versus pointing the finger at all the people who believe blatant lies, feed into these ideas, and promote people when we all have free will. And trad wives didn't invent this. They're just capitalizing on demand for it.
Well, just people who believe the internet and comments have no consequences because you're behind a keyboard.
Well, it's also the idea
behind a screen, like you're the video, you know.
The reason why trad wives picked up so much is because of women's discontent in their lives and the lack of support and the cognitive dissonance that it is to be a woman in modern day, where there's a lot of mothers out there that work a full-time job, but then are expected to come home and work a full-time job being a full-time mom, wife, maid, nanny, like whatever you want to call it. And so they are working themselves to the bone, and they see this kind of idyllic picture where they don't have to work two jobs essentially and they can bake bread and they have more free time. And so it is a cultural moment where women are kind of waking up to say, I don't want to work two full-time jobs. I want an equal partnership. But this is a way of saying an equal partnership in two separate roles, where the man is taking the breadwinner role and the woman's taking the housewife role, and how that seems better than being both all at once.
Right. I totally agree with that, which I think is also a better point because it points the finger back at men and the power structure that's been created through generations of socializing men to behave a certain way in their partnerships. Because this is a dynamic that appears in liberal relationships too. Sometimes we point the finger at these ideals for one group of people when this is kind of a universal problem. And I know lots of couples who, and have had relationships myself with men who professed progressive ideals and then did not live out those ideals in their actual relationships with women. And so I agree. I think this moment is backlash to that because women are aware that they're getting the raw end of the deal still. I think it's an incorrect conclusion to say that feminism has failed when I think ultimately men are continuing to fail. But I think
there is that small contingency of women who enjoy the trad wife movement because they're anti-vaxxers.
Yes. And I think the leftist response to this from women has essentially been the 4B movement, taken from Korea, to say, like, if men can't improve and be better partners, then we just won't engage in partnership. So I think there's two different things happening that are a symptom of the same issue.
Yeah.
I do think, okay, This is my last thing. I saw a review of this book and it kind of summarizes, I think, why I think the satire is so weak. But the woman basically said, my conclusion on this is a symptom of women being forced to inhabit roles that they don't agree with. But like women who want to do this role would not be as, you know, unhappy. And I was like, yeah, that's because you're totally missing the point, which is that these structures are inherently oppressive. Not that like just because Natalie did not want to do this and was forced to.
Yeah, she wanted to do it. That was the issue. Well,
she felt like she had to.
I don't think she wanted to do it.
She did not want to do it at all.
Yeah. She was told that this was her only option.
That was but went it. To Harvard. That's where I got lost.
But then she was very culture shocked at Harvard. It was too much of a
do anything to her. Instead of engaging, she disengaged.
She disengaged, right. But that's because she was never taught how to engage. And also there's a lot of issues with Harvard and I don't want to get into it because.
Yeah.
But like the idea of like Nepo babies, that's where they go. And so that's not the real world. Harvard is not the real world. You're experiencing a very microcosm of the world. Like you're not experiencing the world. And she disengaged because she was never taught to engage and she's engaging in a very toxic environment.
Also, something I found very interesting in those early chapters of the book is that I think Natalie actually correctly identified some of the problems with like leftist elitist spaces.
Yes.
But that was just another theme that was sort of dangled out in front of us and then never followed up on.
The book was trying to do too much and didn't dive in deep enough to the things it was trying to do.
Right. Or the things it said it was going to do.
Yes. And then didn't do what it said it was going to do, which is just crazy.
Okay. Well, this has been a very cathartic experience for me.
I'm glad.
I had critiques. I just thought it was so wild. I was along for the ride, which is typical me. So I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize.
No. Yeah. I was interested to hear your opinions, especially because you're like an active participant in religion.
I'm about as liberal as a Baptist going church goer can be, but yes.
But like you go to church. Neither of us go to church.
Women who think they are part of this movement, honestly. People that I used to be friends with, and one of us left our small town for a while and worked in news in diverse places, and other people didn't. And you see it. I see how the bubble keeps you. Yes. The bubble creates the Natalie's. Not quite that insane, but.
Right.
When you're never taught critical thinking, this is what happens.
I'm not saying they weren't taught critical thinking. I'm just saying they haven't met a variety of people that I've had the pleasure to meet.
Yeah.
I used to be very, very conservative.
Yeah. I used to be very different too.
Same.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot in my 26 years.
Okay. Well, unless you guys have anything else to add, do we want to get to book recommendations, movie recommendations?
I got nothing, y'all.
Scream it from the mouth. Oh, what? I have so many I could give.
We have so many, too.
Jesus.
I want to scream from the mountaintops. The whole time I was reading this book, I was thinking, Girl Dinner did it better.
Yes.
I would agree with that.
So I want to recommend Girl Dinner if you want an actual commentary on how trying to fit into a form of feminism can drive you insane.
And marketed horror.
Definitely horror. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And if we want to talk similar insane narrators, Yellowface.
Mm, yeah, that's a good one.
Damn. Yeah, I could keep going. I who have never known men. Like we could keep going.
Yeah. Okay, I'll shout out the podcast I mentioned. I think it's also a book, but I listened to the podcast. It's called Broken Hearts, and heart is spelled H-A-R-T. So that's about an influencer couple who was abusing their children. Really interesting on terms of sort of like fake influencer lifestyles. I also kind of want to recommend Half His Age. Because I know that was another controversial book on this podcast, but I feel like also not a perfect book, but better executed the themes it was trying to talk about, which was also very much about like women, patriarchy, expectations, and kind of like vulnerability and how people can take advantage of that. The last one I'm going to do is The Compound, which we're reading soon, and I'm very excited about. But that one is kind of dystopian sci-fi about a reality TV show that's based on Love Island. And I think that gets into a lot more of like the performance and the emptiness of being driven by other people's opinions of you and how that kind of leads to this like empty materialism that bankrupts people. So
I would also like to say, I mentioned it in the podcast, but Educated is a memoir about a woman who essentially grew up in a religious cult kind of family in Idaho and leaves to get educated. And that's what would really happen.
Yeah.
You should read that because it's real.
Yeah.
There we go. Leave the world and not learn things. You know, right. You don't just leave your bubble and not learn things. You learn things.
Right.
Plus, it's real. The girl's life is crazy, and she's a really good writer.
Yeah. Nice. Y'all reminded me of Grady Hendrix, so I'm going to do Witchcraft for Wayward Girls, because I think it executes the idea of the have-nots of society and where you place them, and then when the have-nots get power, it's real fun. And I think it touches on cultural moments a lot better than this book.
That book was such a sleeper agent for us.
It was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Several people I know have read that book now because of our podcast on it. And it's been really fun to hear their opinions on it. They've all enjoyed it.
That is fun. Yay. Please don't hate our book wrecks. This one was a mess. So it wasn't really a wreck, I guess, when you eat out the score. But I mean, I think it's a wild ride for the time period we're in. And if you just need to be like, what the heck's happening? People are crazy. Go ahead and give it a read. But if you want a critical think, don't read it.
period. So
you want your brain to break, read this book.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's all we've got. Please rate and review our podcast. Please let us know what you think of this book. I think that this book will probably continue to be extremely talked about and debated with lots of opinions on all sides.
And the movie's coming.
Yeah. Then we'll get a second wave when Anne Hathaway comes out.
Right. Right. Then we'll have even more people kind of talking about it. So yeah, we'd love to hear your thoughts. You can engage with us online at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. And
yeah,
that's it.
Thanks for listening. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.